And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. It's Wednesday, March 20th. Happy first day of spring. And Kyle, happy 22 days until the start of the Masters. Of course, that means that you're probably 3 days from when you're going to be showing up at Augusta, right? You'll be there this weekend.
I actually turned all my content in a week ago. And yeah, I'm ready for the Masters. Are there other events between now and then?
There are other events between now and then, including the Valspar Championship at the Copperhead Course at Innsbruck Resort in Palm Harbor, Florida, that coming up this weekend. And we will get to our picks and expectations and predictions for that a little bit later on in the show. But I feel like there has been within this college basketball bracketology, March Madness, wall-to-wall bracket breakdown coverage, I feel like Rory's players win is going to be more like overlooked and undervalued this golf season. Unless, of course, you know, if he wins the Masters, then it becomes another part of it. But right now, outside of the like very, very diehard golf community, I am not seeing the kind of ripple effect from that news. You and I were jacked about it, like enough to be like, all right, Sunday night, we got to record because we want to talk about Rory. Now, in the days that have passed, I'm like, do you guys realize one of the best golfers in the world just won the Players? And I feel like no one's talking about it.
Well, so here's my take on that. You've got these sort of staggered starts to the year, right? So for me, the golf year starts on like the Kapalua, first round, like Kapalua. That's when my golf year starts. For guys that are, you know, pretty deep into it in terms of like their fandom, it starts at what, Torrey maybe?
Right.
And then so there are different levels of fandom. If you got the casual fan, maybe they don't start until maybe the Masters. Like maybe that's when they, because I think so much of this is you see every year, like, okay, the Masters is like the last of the staggered like starts to the golf year, and so like such a large swath of people that are like quote unquote into golf, it doesn't even start for them until the first round at Augusta. And so this Players move to March, when the Players is in May, those people are in because they're in for that 5 months until the end of the PGA Championship, and then they're back out until the Masters the next year. And so this Players move to March like falls outside of that purview. And so I think that it hasn't resonated. It was a bad weekend for it in terms of other sports like Selection Sunday. I know that I read Shane Ryan's, he did a running diary of Rory's win. It was hilarious, but he's like, I have to go get to Selection Sunday. And I think that was, you know, true of a lot of people who are just casual, like, oh, I wonder who's leading the golf tournament type fans.
Shout out to Shane Ryan.
He was beside himself about just everything that was going on with Rory on Sunday. It was hilarious to watch.
Really? Okay. Well, we might need to get him on here to defend himself. What about for, you know, is it possible that kind of victory, which for Rory, he said himself, was validation for a lot of the work and the form that he felt like he'd been turning in. And, you know, we've reviewed the statistics in terms of how strong his resume has been so far through 2019. Do you think that the fact that it wasn't packed with all this extra, you know, even beyond the golf media world, with this extra meaning and this extra hype and this extra hubbub, is there any way that is something that you could look at as a continued positive as Rory just sort of reshapes what this tenure of his career is, or this chapter of his career is going to look like?
Yeah, I think that helps. I don't know. I don't know how much though, because I think the primary pressure that Rory feels is from people like us, and not like us specifically, but from the Brand O'Chambly, the golf media, the people that are like deep into it. Mm-hmm. And all those people are still deep into it. So I don't know that he really feels a ton of weight from like the guy who's, you know, playing one and done for his, you know, fantasy league or whatever. Like, I don't think that he, I don't think he carries that weight like maybe somebody like Tiger did. He does carry it, but I don't think it's as heavy. I think here's what's interesting. I brought this up on Morning Drive like a month ago whenever I was on, but I think the sort of carrot of Port Rush. Have we talked about this?
Yes, a little bit. I watched you, so maybe I got it then.
So I think the idea of Port Rush having the open and that being like a really big deal for him is helpful and beneficial for the Masters. And also the reality that like people haven't really, really been paying attention, I think is because if people were paying attention and they're like, oh my gosh, Rory's going to win the Masters by 10. I think he would feel a little bit of that, but because they're not, it's almost like his players win slipped under the radar, which is like the best thing that could happen is for him to both A, win, and B, for it to not really resonate in the greater sports world.
Okay, because it does feel positive. It feels like this is a thing that, you know, I mean, and I'm sure Rory McIlroy hates someone else like applying his own logic to, you know, his narrative that he very much should own himself, but
yeah.
I can logically sort of put together these different pieces of information and say, wow, that like it seems better than the opposite of every single person in the whole sports world was dialed in, and now every single person in the sports world is making Rory the number one story at Augusta. I mean, for common Joe sports fan or Jane sports fan, you know, whether you are a Joe or a Jane or a them, it's still Tiger, and it's not Rory, it's Tiger.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the way that Tiger feels that I think people don't get. It's just, it's so constant and it just goes on forever. You know, people can't understand like what that, I mean, I don't understand what it feels like. I can't imagine that kind of weight. But yeah, I do think, yeah. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, like it's better for Rory that he won the Players in March than in May.
You ready for the tinfoil hat conspiracy?
Yeah, I'm always ready for anything in that realm.
It was rigged as a deep inside job golf pass promotion. As soon as he won, like Carson Daly tweets, he's like, "Congratulations, Roars! Can't wait to talk about it on the podcast." And I was like, "Oh no. This was an inside job."
Niall Horan's producing next time we see it.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? No, I don't think I finished off my thought about Port Rush. I think the fact that Port Rush is the Open this year is beneficial to Rory because I think that the weight of Augusta is so heavy that it's like, okay, well, even if I don't win Augusta, I still have Port Rush in July, because winning the Open there is different than just winning the Open. It's in Northern Ireland. Like it's just that's a big deal, you know.
Big deal for him, or big deal for him. Big deal for any European player, or big deal period.
No, for him.
Okay,
and for Graham McDowell. Like if he can get it, like anybody that's from there, it's a huge deal to win it there. So I think that will benefit him as well. I mean, Man, I don't know. It just feels like I saw Porath on. He was on Morning Drive this week, and they did like a 1 to 10 rate your like the hype train for Rory at Augusta, and he threw a 10 up there, and like I thought he was gonna stand up. I thought he was gonna like stand up and start like hooting and hollering about Rory coming down Magnolia Lane, and like. I mean, you look at the numbers, Chip. Jake Nicklaus tweeted these out. He's playing better right now than he has at any point in time at this part of the year in his career. Like he should finish in the top 10 at Augusta, which I know that's not like going out on a limb. He's finished there, I think, each of the last 5 years, but it's just he's so locked in. I don't know. Do you want to talk about the Masters a little?
In just a second, but first we've got to remind our listeners, you know, we know that you want to win your bracket. I mean, that's pretty much a no-brainer. But Sportsline can help you with those sought-after office bragging rights. Last year, their optimal bracket finished in the top 5% of CBS Sports brackets and called Villanova winning it all, and their upset bracket called 12 of 18 first-round upsets by double-digit seeds in the past 3 years. So visit sportsline.com/brackets for the insight that you need to win. First Cut listeners, that is you, can sign up for Sportsline right now. Use the promo code EAGLE. That's what we're all trying to get out there on those par fives. Sportsline, using that promo code EAGLE, and you'll get your first month for just $1. That's right, $1 for your first month of Sportsline. It's the perfect time to sign up so that you can get that bracket advice you need to win your pools. That is, go to sportsline.com/brackets, sign up, and use the promo code EAGLE to get your first month for just $1. So are you done with all your Augusta preview stuff?
No, not quite. But I'm getting close on my ranking the field 1 through 90. I've got 18 Masters facts you might not know. So I'm getting close on some of that stuff. And then, you know, I'll have smaller stuff as we get a little bit closer. I think I'm going to try to talk to Justin Ray and Jake Nicklaus about like kind of a what's the statistical profile of somebody that plays really well at Augusta? Because those guys are a lot smarter about that stuff than I am, and I think they would be really intriguing to kind of talk to about that kind of thing.
What is what's been sort of buzzing in your mind as you've been breaking it down and turning it in? Like what right now, as we sit here again, as I introduced at the beginning, 22 days away from the start of Masters play, unbelievable that it's coming up this close. What's sort of humming for you right now?
In terms of like who I'm going to pick or just anything?
Not who you're going to pick, but just sort of like what sometimes when I spend, and it happens a lot for me with the college football playoff because it gets announced in early December and then we've got almost a month before it comes around. And then when, you know, the week before I leave, I'll start to be like, oh, you know what I haven't thought about? Or like as I'm doing research, you come across something new that makes you not change your mind about who you think you're going to win, but certainly a new factor, a new wrinkle that's going to be resonating with you. And then, and I'm sure this is going to happen for you too, there'll be another wave of it once you actually arrive on site, get there, start talking to people. So like right now at this point in the preparation process, you know, what seems to be mattering to you right now?
Well, there's a couple of things. The first thing, I came across some data that the 15th Club put out, which is who Ray and Jake Nicklaus work for. This was a couple years ago, and they were, or it might have been last year, they were talking about how wedge play doesn't matter as much at Augusta as it might seem like. Like it's definitely not as important as distance off the tee, and then short and long iron play. And I thought that was interesting because I think the thing that we bemoan with somebody like Rory a lot of times, oh, can't his wedge is close, and it's like, well, statistically, this might not even matter. You know, and
if so he's sticking greens on his approach shots, who cares about his wedges?
That's one sort of kind of nugget that I'm going to try to go deeper on over the next few weeks. One thing I tweeted out yesterday. So this was Masters first time Masters winners by attempt. The numbers are pretty interesting, Chip, because you've got 16, you got 24 of the however many winners in their first attempt or however many first time winners won in one of their first four attempts.
Oh,
so three golfers have won it on their first attempt, five on their second, eight on their third, and eight on their fourth. And then it kind of tails off from there. Once you get past 12, only four guys have won on their 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, or 19th attempt. And Rory's on, this will be attempt number 11 for him.
Wow.
Yeah. So Sergio won it on his 19th. Nobody's ever won it on 16, 17, 18. One player won it on 13, one on 14, one on 15, and then Sergio on 19. Adam Scott and Phil Mickelson both won it on their 12th attempt.
The premise being that if it ain't gonna, if it doesn't happen after a certain point, it might not happen.
Yeah, I mean, and this is hard too because like Rory was playing the Masters when he's 20, right? And so most guys don't play it until they're 27 or 28 or whatever, 30. And so he's a little bit of an anomaly, and I think that you see that in guys like Scott and Phil, right? So they won it on their 12th attempt. Well, that's because they've been playing it for, you know, since they were teenagers almost.
Right.
And so I do think that he could potentially fall on that spectrum, but Man, I don't know. I think that going into March, I felt as if there were like 15 storylines that mattered. And now it feels like there's like one.
You can't help yourself.
No, I can't.
No.
I'm in too deep.
Lost cause.
The other thing, how about this? Best average Masters finish when making the cut. So you have to make the cut for it to count. In the last 10 Masters. And I put a minimum of 5 made cuts. So you can't have played in like 2 and make this list. Do you want to guess who's first on the list? Best average Masters finish when making the cut in the last 10 Masters.
Ricky Fowler.
Fowler's on the list, but he's like 13th.
Okay. Last 10 years. So we're going back to 2008?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Minimum 5 cuts made.
Justin Rose.
Justin Rose is second. His average finish in the last 10 years when he makes the cut is 11.6, which is crazy.
Yeah. If he's going to make the cut, he's going to be in the top. He's a lock for the top 10. That's stupid.
And he's made 9 of those cuts. So I think he's missed one cut, or maybe he missed a tournament.
I'm only going to say this because I knew you wrote about him, so it's not necessarily a good guess, but is it Patrick Reed?
No, it's Jordan Spieth. His average finish, 3.8. Average finish. 5 Masters, 3.8.
That's the thing, is you feel like there's only one, but all it's going to take is a 66 on Thursday from Spieth to just like totally throw everything into the, like, just throw an ice cream sandwiches into a speeding Blade fan.
There's going to be a pimento cheese food fight in the cafeteria. Yeah.
People aren't going to be able to handle them. There's so much stock that's going to change hands in the Augusta media tent throughout the weekend.
I can't wait. I'm so ready for it. The rest of the top, I'll read the top 10. Spieth, Rose, Paul Casey's third. How about that?
Defending Valspar champion Paul Casey.
Rory's fourth. Jason Day. Angel Cabrera's sixth. Tiger, Westwood, Furyk, Fred Couples, Adam Scott, Phil, Kuchar, and then rounding out, I don't know how many names are on here, 13 or so. Fowler, Ricky Fowler, Brant Snedeker, and Louis Oosthuizen all have an average finish of 19th when they make the cut in the last 10 years.
I'm guessing we're probably going to get Robbie Calland back on here for a Masters preview at some point. I'll go ahead and spoil it. That boy loads up on Fred Couples in head-to-heads at the Masters. He's just like, nah, principal play. Couples loves Augusta.
That's great.
I'm
already excited. It's, you know, I think every year I've tried to space out kind of my prep work, like starting it in February, starting it in early March, just so that I feel like fully prepared. Cause you don't, I mean, who knows like which way things are going to go when we get there, and you want to be ready for whatever's going to happen. And it's such a big deal. You know, it's almost like if the majors are a step up from all the other tournaments, the Masters is a step up from all the other majors, just in the way it's covered, how much it matters, how important the players see it. It's just, it's such a different week. And you want to be ready for it. By the way, Patrick Reed had a teleconference on Monday, and he mentioned 2 chains on the teleconference. I think that was a first in Masters history.
Well, you got to give me the context.
He said that he was at a Knicks game, and 2 chains touched his jacket and asked if it was the real thing.
I'll throw this out there. I think that it is more likely that that Patrick Reed, actually, I could be wrong about that, because he does have some, you know, the Georgia connection there. But I was going to say, does Patrick Reed know 2 Chainz more for his reality show where he just experiences the most expensive things ever, or from his music?
What's his reality show? I don't even know about this. Shockingly.
He's, well, I mean, I'm not asking you to follow the reality show scene. Okay, it's called The Most Expensivest.
Okay, that seems pretty highbrow.
It's on Viceland. It's very highbrow. shot in New York and Las Vegas, the series finds two chains trying excesses like an $800 bottle of beer, $5,000 chicken wings, and $600 coffee. He also samples some
$600 coffee.
He also samples some rare wines, plays with $165,000 kittens, and has a $10,000 steak dinner.
This is crazy. This is terrible. I don't like this. I'm out. Is he gonna go like play catch with Mike Trout next? Did you see the Mike Trout contract?
430.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this. Tiger's made 116 on the course in his PGA Tour career, and if you go look up the list of baseball players that have made more than Tiger, it's stupendous. Three different baseball players with the last name Ramirez have made more money than Tiger on in the course of their careers. One of them I hadn't even heard of. I don't really follow baseball anymore. Bartolo Colon, Hunter Pence, Mike Hampton, Mark Burley have all made more than Tiger Woods in the course of their careers.
But they didn't secure that Nike bag.
Yeah.
It gets different off the course.
It's a lot different.
All right. We will turn our attention to the Valspar with our expert picks, our predictions, coming up right after this.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all up.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violent Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Of course, the wonderful Copperhead course where the entire nation of sports fans was introduced to the idea of a paint can as a tee marker a year ago. We have returned to Tiger's glorious second place finish a year ago. That was the shotgun blast heard around the world that Tiger might be marching his way back. Tiger Woods will not be in the field this week, but our field's pretty good, right?
I think people have been talking about how like the Valspar got put in a bad position. And anytime you're behind a tournament like the Players, it is a bad position. But I think it's a pretty great field. I mean, you got DJ, you got Rom, Sergio, Webb's in it, Jason Day. I mean, it's not bad.
Tommy Fleetwood as a late scratch. Though.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. You've got who else do you let me see who you got here?
Jim Furyk.
Furyk, yeah, Woodland, Patty Reed, Stenson. I mean, a lot of these guys are guys that are kind of mainstays at this event. It does stink because last year you had Tiger, you had Spieth, you had Rory, and it's just a tough spot because you're like, okay, well, am I going to play four in a row and then take the week before the Masters off? Some guys like to play before the Masters. It's kind of a dicey, like weird lead into the Masters because of match play, because the Players just happened, and because of the Texas Open. It's kind of awkward.
What are you looking for in terms of storylines that you're following?
Well, the amateur whose name I can't pronounce. Hold on. I've got it right here. Let's try to pronounce it.
Akshay Bhatia.
Say that again.
Akshay Bhatia.
There you go.
Is that right?
Akshay. I think so. It's closer than I was going to get.
You said let's give it a run. So
yeah, no,
gave it my best.
Akshay Bhatia. So he's number 9 ranked amateur in the world. He is, I think, 17. He's a lefty. He's 6 foot, 130 pounds.
That's twigs.
Yeah, but he's really good.
I think that's a BMI in the single digits.
I think he's the top junior in the world, and he's planning on turning pro out of high school, not going to college. So he's actually got, I was reading an article about him on MyrtleBeachOnline.com, which beware of going to look up the article because it broke our
CMS.
Something broke our system on CBSSports.com. But he's got two swing coaches, which is interesting. And one of them is George Gankis, who is Matthew Wolf's swing coach. And so he's an interesting dude. He's very confident in his abilities. I don't know. I mean, I think he understands. I think a lot of these young guys, like, they're going into some of this stuff with eyes like wider open than maybe 20 or 30 years ago, just because there's more stuff available. Like, you can read more, you can watch more, you can play more. Just in terms of like your access to guys that you're going to be going against is great. He's played in a bunch of Monday qualifiers for PGA Tour and web.com. So I'm pretty intrigued. We saw an amateur a couple years ago, Lee McCoy, finished fourth at this event and actually contended to win it on Sunday. So I don't think that's going to happen just because McCoy was already in college and pretty seasoned. But that'll be a big storyline, especially if he makes the cut.
Do you think he makes the cut?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. I'll be rooting for him to make the cut.
Fair. Totally fair.
I don't know. I think he will contend to make the cut, and then it'll just come down to, you know, make a few putts, whatever.
Where is the – so your pick to win is Dustin Johnson. I'm not going to spoil it because – well, I am going to spoil it because I want to just, like, sort of dive into a quick refresher of what we talked about on Sunday. He fires off 469s and does so in the process of having a really, really bad putting performance, particularly – with misses inside of 10 feet as he's continuing to grind and continuing to play. Like, it's always tough to get a sense of where things are going for Dustin Johnson, just because he is, you know, he is so committed to just being DJ. You know, he lays it out simply and you're like, oh, well, yeah, you're right. You didn't do that well. You did everything else amazing. And that's why this happened. Do you think is this a spot where you're looking for him to show anything different, or is it more of being concerned about seeing the putting struggles continue in a way that would make you adjust his odds to win at Augusta?
Yeah, the putting will be interesting. This is a place where you know, I was reading, who was I reading? I think it was Rob Bolton at PGAtour.com. He does a really great weekly kind of fantasy rankings deal. And he was talking about how this is a place where the greens are sort of a little bit softer and kind of gettable. And so it can be somewhere where if you're a Keegan Bradley, if you're a Dustin Johnson, even if you're a Sergio, you can kind of, you know, find your stroke a little bit because you're not, you know, you can find your speed, I think, a little bit easier here and maybe hole a few putts and kind of get going. But I mean, the reality is it's a tough course, and on a tough course in a field like this, that's maybe good, but not great with the way DJ's playing. I mean, Chip, there's only two guys that are better than 2 strokes gained per round on the field on the PGA Tour this year. And one of them's on the field. That's Rory, who won last week. He's at like 2.8, which is obscene. I mean, that's like I went back and looked, the highest number, I think, in the strokes gained era. So since 2003, I think Tiger put up like a 3.1 or 3.2 in 2006. And Rory's at like 2.7 or 8 right now.
Man, we need to adjust strokes gained against the field when the field stunk compared to what it does now.
Yeah.
I think Rory's strokes gained stats now are more impressive than Tiger's strokes gained stats from 15 years ago based on the strength of the field.
Wow. Wow. Is
that spicy?
Yeah, I mean, it's semi-spicy. I like it, though.
If we adjust for tempo, We need to adjust for weak ass fields.
So in 2006, Tiger was 3.30.
Goodness.
Jim Furyk was second at 2.5. Adam Scott was third at 2.0. And Luke Donald was fourth at 1.9. Mm. So there were only three guys over two, and Tiger was at 3.3. This year, Rory's at 2.74. DJ's at two. This is my original point. DJ's at 2.6. And then you got to go all the way down to Justin Thomas at 2.1, and nobody else is over two. So my point is that he is by far the best player in the field, and playing the best golf of anybody in the field. So it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's just an easy pick. I've got Sergio top 10. He's been kind of playing sneaky, really, really good golf. He's got, I think, four straight top 25s, a couple of top 10s in there, closed pretty well at the Players. I think he was 6 under on Sunday, and he usually plays really well at Valspar. And then sleeper is the other Rory, Sabo.
Sabatini?
Rory Sabatini. He finished top 10 here last year, played pretty well for part of the Players. So he's like 150-1. So I kind of like him this week.
What about what is Rory Sabatini's Rory nickname within the golf world?
Well, Brendan and Andy Johnson call him the boy from Bratislava because he changed his nationality to Slovakian. He became like a Slovakian native. Have you heard about this?
No.
Yeah, he married, I think, somebody from Slovakia. And so now he can like get into the Olympics like under their flag.
Oh. And that's his game plan?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know
what he's doing.
We just know he has eligibility.
Yeah, he's no longer like he's Slovakian and he's not South African anymore. I don't know how do you even do that? Like, can I just go become like Canadian?
No. You can't. you want to know why, Kyle? Because Texas has its hold on you for life and Oklahoma.
Yeah, maybe I'll just be Texan. Maybe like when they have the Riders Open and like all of us are playing at Pinehurst number 9, like in the after the Masters, like I'll just have a Texas flag next to my name.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the Lone Star State would be proud of you for that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be great. All right, DJ to win. Sergio's your top 10 lock. Rory Sabatini is your sleeper. Let's say, man, let's go Keegan Bradley. Chip's pick.
I like that.
He's playing well.
Yeah, you know where he's kind of sneaky fun is Augusta.
I could see it.
Like I don't think he's gonna win Augusta because he's like 207th in putting right now. But he's a great long iron player. I don't know. It's kind of intriguing.
Very intriguing. He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at @KylePorterCBS. You can follow me at @Chip_Patterson. We will be back on Monday morning. Is that all right with you, Kyle?
Sounds good.
All right. I think I'm going to have I'm at a Friday Sunday in Columbia, and because we've got Duke, I don't think we're going to be the early afternoon tips the way these things normally break. And so
you're going to be deep in it.
Yeah, I'll be driving back late Sunday. We'll knock it out Monday morning talking about whoever got all the paint cans. Kyle, thank you very much.
See you, Chip.